States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Israel's military denied striking a tent camp west of Rafah Tuesday after Gaza health authorities said Israeli tank shelling had killed more than 20 people there. The latest bombardment comes days after an Israeli attack off a fire, a Rafah tent camp that killed at least 45 people. Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston.
Israel said it had targeted Hamas commanders and had not intended to cause civilian casualties.
This is a devastating incident.
An Israeli army spokesperson said the military was investigating the possibility that munitions stored near a compound targeted in Sunday's airstrike may have ignited the blaze. Meanwhile,
Ireland formally recognizes the state of Palestine.
Spain, Ireland, and Norway officially recognized a Palestinian state.
That is Reuters correspondent Angela Johnston reporting. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron Tuesday was among the global outcry after an Israeli airstrike Sunday triggered a massive blaze killing 45 people in the tent camp.
Did look very, very concerning, very worrying, and so we're asking for that to be investigated rapidly. The Israelis have already said it was a tragic mistake, but we want to see that properly investigated.
Chief Israeli military spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said it was unclear what set off the deadly blaze, but added that 17-kilogram munitions used in the strike were believed to be too small to have set off such a big fire. Spain, Norway, and Ireland formally recognized the Palestinian state Tuesday in a coordinated effort by the three Western European nations to add international pressure on Israel to soften its response to last year's Hamas-led attack. Israel condemned the diplomatic move, which will have no immediate impact on the war in Gaza. This is VOA News. Defense officials in NATO member Poland have presented a plan to strengthen surveillance and defense along its eastern border with Russia and Russian ally Belarus. The government says Poland, which supports Ukraine in its defense against Russia's aggression, is being targeted by hostile actions from Russia and Belarus. They include cyber attacks, attempted arson, and migrants being pushed illegally across the border. The government plans to invest more than $2.5 billion in state-of-the-art anti-drone surveillance and defense fortifications, barriers, and natural obstacles to strengthen defense and deterrence at the border. The defense minister and armed forces chief of staff on Monday presented those details of the plan, which should be completed in 2028. The African National Congress has been governing South Africa since 1994, when Nelson Mandela was elected president following the end of apartheid. But as voters get ready to go to the polls Wednesday, the party, known for its opposition to apartheid, faces dissatisfaction from some citizens who feel the party has not delivered on its promises. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has that story.
Daryl Glazer, associate professor at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, says it's going to be the closest election since the era of inclusive democracy began in South Africa in 1994.
All the opinion polls are suggesting that there's a very serious chance that the ANC is going to fall below 50% of the vote and that it's going to be forced into some kind of coalition.
Glazer and other analysts have told VOA that allegations of corruption, scandals, and disunity within the ANC have helped the opposition gain ground. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Lawyers made their closing arguments in former U.S. President Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial on Tuesday. Reuters correspondent Emma Jelly reports.
Trump is charged with falsifying business records to cover up a $130,000 payment to porn star Stormy Daniels in 2016. To keep quiet about a sexual encounter she says they had 10 years earlier. Trump denies wrongdoing and says he never had sex with Daniels. In his closing argument, defense lawyer Todd Blanche sought to discredit the testimony of both Daniels and former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, who testified he handled the payment to Daniels and that Trump approved the cover-up. New York prosecutor Joshua Steinglass urged jurors to set aside their personal views of Trump and instead determine whether prosecutors had proven their case. Jurors could begin deliberations as soon as Wednesday.
UN Development Specialist Gary Connolly was named Haiti's new prime minister Tuesday evening, nearly a month after a coalition within a fractured transitional council sought to choose someone else for the position. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Abbott in Washington. Today's Wednesday, May 29th. Here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africa votes today, Wednesday, as some black voters in the Western Cape keep quiet about support for the opposition.
When Mandela was coming outside, then I was voting ANC, because ANC, then they give me a house.
South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party accuses President Ramaphosa of violating the Electoral Act. Analysts urge a shift from military to economic solution to counter terrorism in the Sahel. Liberia's government rescinds a major developmental decision after a public outcry. Rights groups and CFOs in Nigeria hold a national day of mourning for victims of mass atrocities.
This incident of violence have reduced the citizens' right to life and dignity. The frequency of these atrocities have kept Nigerians in a state of perpetual fear and uncertainty.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The run-up to South Africa's general elections on Wednesday has been mostly peaceful, but not without incident. In Western Cape Province, the Opposition Democratic Alliance, or DA, accused rival parties of trying to intimidate voters in February by chanting violent slogans and brandishing weapons at voter registration locations. For years, some black voters in the province have been scared of being attacked if they admit to supporting the white-led DA. Reporter Vicky Stark visited one voter's home in the township of Maniburg to get this story.
The supporter of the Democratic Alliance is a single mother who works in a restaurant.
I don't want to identify because most of the people in my area is a black people. I don't know, maybe I can get hurt because they doesn't like a DA member. They still vote for the ANC. Even ANC doesn't give them nothing because ANC is too much corruption. That's why we get fed up of that.
The woman says she believes that the track record of the DA, South Africa's main opposition party, speaks for itself. According to reports from South Africa's Auditor General, the Western Cape, which the DA party governs at the provincial level, is the best-run province in the country. Despite this achievement, the DA's critics say it protects only white business interests. The voter, whom VOA spoke with, disagrees.
For me, the DA is for everyone. Even if we are black or white or colored, we are in a rainbow nation.
The woman's mother, who is in her late 80s, does not agree and remains a staunch ANC supporter, ever grateful to that party and its former president, Nelson Mandela, for the state-sponsored house she received in 1996.
When Mandela was coming outside, then I was voting ANC, because ANC, then they give me a house, cause I was stay in a shed.
However, both women are afraid they will be targeted if people know whom the daughter votes for in the general election. Political analyst Cheryl Africa, associate professor at the University of the Western Cape's Department of Political Science, believes that attitudes will change when political leaders stop harping on race to win votes.
That can often lead into inflammatory rhetoric, particularly racially divisive rhetoric, where there's an attempt to play on the anxiety of particular voters.
While intimidation is a legitimate concern for voters, the Western Cape is not known for political killings. They are far more common in KwaZulu-Natal province, where, according to the National Police Minister, Beki Qele, at least 155 office holders and councillors had been killed between 2011 and September last year. And with former President Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto we Sizwe party making its debut in this election, tensions in that province, Zuma's home, are heightened. For this election, police have put more boots on the ground countrywide and urged political parties to adhere to the Electoral Code of Conduct, which makes intimidating candidates or voters an offence. Parties that break the code can be fined up to 200,000 rand, that's about $11,000, or sent to prison for up to 10 years. Vicky Stark, VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
South Africans are voting today, Wednesday, in presidential and provincial elections. President Cyril Ramaphosa of the ruling African National Congress, the ANC, is seeking his second and final five-year term. While the ANC is expected to win, some analysts say the party's victory margin could fall below 50% for the first time in 30 years. Meanwhile, the main opposition Democratic Alliance, DA party, has filed a complaint with the Electoral Commission accusing President Ramaphosa of violating the Electoral Act by using a television speech on Sunday to highlight his administration's achievements. Helen Zille is chairperson of the DA's Federal Council. She tells me that the DA has asked the Electoral Commission to take away 1% of the ANC's total votes as a penalty.
The purpose of our lawsuit is to hold the president accountable for abuse of the state broadcaster for his own party's political advantage. The president wanted to give a presidential address to the nation on Sunday night, and it turned out to be little more than a thinly disguised election platform for his party, the ANC. Now, we believe in the separation of party and state, and for the president to abuse his state office to drive a party political message on a state broadcaster gives the president and his party a very unfair advantage. So we have made a charge against the president under the code of conduct, which makes it unlawful to do that kind of thing. And we've asked for the president to be fined 200,000 rand in his personal capacity and to forfeit 1% of his party's votes in the election.
What exactly did President Ramaphosa say in his speech? After all, he's the president of South Africa. He can speak to the people of South Africa at any time.
It is not often that the president addresses the nation. It is usually on some crucial issue of general public importance or matter of state. For example, before we had the COVID lockdowns, he spoke to the nation, because something like this had never happened before. So it was a crucial matter of public importance, and the president addressed the nation on what was happening, why it was happening, and what it could expect. But now, 3 days before an election, the president announces he wants to address the nation again. And the speech that he gives to the nation is not a speech about a matter of crucial public interest. It is to extol the record of achievement of his own political party in government. And what we've done is we've compared his speech at his party's rally on Saturday. We've compared that with his speech on Sunday night. And there are very significant similarities between those two speeches, which shows that what the president made on the public broadcaster, pretending it to be an address to the nation of vital public significance, was nothing more than a thinly disguised abuse of the public broadcaster and the platform of state to promote his own party.
So you would like for the Elections Commission to take away a percentage of the total votes that the ANC might receive in the election. One would say that is not fair.
No, that's absolutely fair, because, you know, that is a punishment allowed for in law. That if any party abuses the institutions of state for party political purposes and canvassing, they can be required by a court of law to forfeit a percentage of their overall gains in the election. And that's what we're asking the court to rule.
Helen Zille is the chairperson of the opposition Democratic Alliance Party's Federal Council. She was speaking with me from Cape Town. The ruling African National Congress, ANC, agreed to our request for an interview but was not available by the time of this broadcast. The Sahel region has become the new epicenter of global terrorism, prompting nations worldwide to intensify efforts to counter the violence through military training, such as the Flintlock 2024 drills in Ghana and the Ivory Coast. Analysts, however, say that addressing economic deficiencies in the region would be a more effective deterrent. Sinanu Tor reports from Tamale, Ghana.
At the Tamale International Airport in Ghana, troops engage in a simulated gunfight. This drill is part of the U.S.-Africa Security Partnership,
that aims to bolster efforts to combat terrorism in the region. Major General Todd Wasserman is the commanding general for the U.S. Army Southern European Task Force, Africa.
The most important objective for these exercises is to build partner capacity and capability. We focus on things like setting the theater, developing interoperability, and helping our partners to develop those capabilities that are necessary to achieve their security objectives in Africa.
Organized by the U.S. Department of Defense, Flint Lock 2024 draws thousands of security stakeholders from Europe, Asia, and about 30 partner countries to Ghana and the Ivory Coast. For 2 weeks, they participate in combat simulations and share intelligence on countering terrorism. Sahel neighbors like Ghana, which has no record of terrorist activity, use these exercises to stay prepared. Nana Abna Dakwa Adapa is a major in Ghana's army.
We are observing that this terrorist and armed elements, the activities are progressing, and we need to find ways and means to match up.
Security analysts, however, argue that focusing on military responses to terrorism in the Sahel has failed. Despite the deployment of tens of thousands of military troops to the region, such as during France's Operation Barkhane and the United Nations MINUSMA and G5 Sahel Joint Force, terrorism has seen a significant rise. According to the Global Terrorism Index 2024, published by the Institute for Economics and Peace, Sub-Saharan Africa has become the new global epicenter of terrorism, accounting for over 50% of deaths from terrorism in 2023. Mutaru Mumunu Mukhtar, the executive director of the West Africa Center for Counter-Extremism, criticizes the militaristic approach.
There's a lot of, you know, grievances within the local population. It ignores the realities of the vulnerabilities or the drivers of violent extremism. And the issues of human security, the issues of job creation, addressing youth vulnerabilities, marginalization.
Mukhtar says without economic security, the youth become vulnerable and are easily radicalized by extremist groups.
A young person believes that the IMF engagement with Africa or the local countries are, you know, built around conditionalities that prevents them from stimulating economic growth that can allow the state to recruit or create jobs for young people. And so they blame the West.
This sentiment is reflected by increasing calls for African nations to sever relationships with foreign partners. Strained relationships between the U.S. and the nations of Niger and Chad are examples, with the U.S. saying in April that it would withdraw its troops from both, potentially hampering counter-terrorism efforts in the Sahel. The U.S. says it is committed to restoring its relationships based on shared values. Virginia Palmer is the U.S. ambassador to Ghana.
The United States is still discussing how security relations with Niger, for example, will be handled. And we all, and including Ghana and other ECOWAS countries, are concerned about democratic backsliding.
Experts say that if strained relationships and economic deficiencies in the Sahel region are not resolved, military-centric approaches to counter-terrorism are likely to continue. Sena Anutod, VOA News, Tamale, Ghana.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 29th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A coalition of human rights and civil society groups in Nigeria marked what they call a national day of mourning to remember victims of mass atrocities in Nigeria and to demand accountability from authorities. This year's commemoration comes amid worsening insecurity in Africa's largest country, despite authorities' effort to fix the problem. Timothy Obiezu reports from the site of the remembrance ceremony in Abuja.
Representatives from more than 80 civil society and rights organizations hold a moment of silence to remember some 9,000 people who have died in the last year due to various forms of violence. The annual National Day of Mourning initiative was launched 7 years ago to pay tribute to victims of attacks and demand the government restore security in the country. Lois Outer of the nonprofit Cedar Seed Foundation is one of the event's organizers.
This incident of violence helped reduce the citizens' right to life and dignity. The frequency of these atrocities have kept Nigerians in a state of perpetual fear and uncertainty, and is impacting social cohesion, the economy, and education across the country.
Nigeria is struggling to reduce multiple forms of widespread insecurity, including kidnappings, communal clashes, terrorism, extrajudicial killings, and secessionist violence. The coalition said more than 30,000 people have died in the last 6 years as a result. This year's commemoration coincides with the one-year anniversary of President Bola Tinubu taking office. Tinubu pledged to improve security and boost the economy if elected president. But 1 year later, critics here say he has not only failed on his promises, but the situation has gotten worse. Frank Tietje is the founder of Citizens Advocacy for Social and Economic Rights.
My primary responsibility of government is to protect the Nigerian people. At this point, at the celebration of his 1 year anniversary in government, we, the collective civil society organizations of Nigeria, are telling him that he has totally failed.
According to a security tracker by Nigerian-based Beacon Security and Consulting Limited, incidents of attacks increased from 5,500 between 2022 and 2023 to 7,800 between 2023 and 2024. The number of fatalities and abductions were also higher during the same period. Security analyst Kabir Adamu says despite the government making an effort, poor accountability and unwise appointments in the security sector pose major hurdles.
It's very obvious that the government is committed to addressing the security challenge. As indicated, it's policy imperative, and those policy imperatives are very clear. As an expert, if they are implemented, I believe they will help reduce or even eliminate the security challenge. But the major challenge has been one of implementation, especially due to the absence of capability by some of the security sector leadership.
Adamu says 1 year is not enough time for the insecurity issues to be fully addressed by a new administration, but that authorities should be able during 12 months to show a positive trajectory towards addressing the problem. But for now, rights groups and families of the victims will be reminding the president about the promise he made to keep their loved ones and the country safe. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The government of Liberia has rescinded major developmental decisions after a public outcry over the lack of accountability. Meanwhile, as Dennis Nipson reports from Monrovia, the government has restored water supply to central Monrovia after a 10-year lapse.
Last week, the Liberian government, through the Minister of State with a portfolio, Mamaka Ability, announced the arrival of 285 F-moving machines to Liberia. She said the country's 15 counties will each receive 19 road maintenance machines. The announcement did not make clear how the machines were acquired during mixed public reaction. However, on Tuesday, Minister of Information Jerilimic Pierre backtracked on the pronouncement. He said the government had not officially agreed to the deal and is working out the required procedures.
The government of Liberia, under President Buaka, will get moving equipment to reestablish the maintenance zones. But the processes that are needed for the acquisition are still in the works. But when they arrive, you'll be told who the source is, you'll be told, because it will be an open process.
Senator Augustin Chie is the head of the Senate Committee on Judiciary, Human Rights Claims and Petition. He says the government's backpedaling shows that it did not follow proper procedures.
If a state actor, especially at the level of the Ministry of State, a deputy minister for that matter, who has the ears of the president and who spoke at a retreat of the cabinet where the president was present that this equipment were coming to our country. What conclusion will anybody draw from that kind of statement?
Meanwhile, the Liberia Water and Sewer Corporation, or LWSC, announced the restoration of running water in the capital after nearly a decade. Managing Director Muhammad Ali says the government hopes to connect 1,000 households.
Recently, we commissioned a water supply to Central Monrovia. In the last 10, 15 years, I remember there hasn't been pipe-borne water supply in this. The entire Central Monrovia is receiving water. The only problem is, because it has been very, very long time, we have massive leaks on some of the pipes, is to repair the leak. We intend in our first phase to connect 1,000 households in Central Monrovia.
Ohinine Jawi, a resident of Central Monrovia, says he was surprised to see water flowing through the pipes of his house.
I saw water coming in a pipe because where I live, the pipe there burst. The water actually came for the whole day. They benefited enough from the water. I myself personally, I sent some boys and they got water for me, so myself benefited from it.
With all of the recent developments, including the high rice price, many Liberians are wondering whether President Joseph Boakai is in full control of some of the development-related announcements his government has made in recent weeks. For VOA Africa, I'm Denise Nipsin in Monrovia, Liberia.
Senegal's President Bassirou Diomaye Faye on Tuesday launched a national consultation to reform and modernize the country's justice system. It's a priority for the new leader, who left prison just 10 days before his election victory. Faye, his Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko, and several of their party members were imprisoned during the presidency of former leader Macky Sall. They have repeatedly denounced the manipulation of the justice system over the past 3 years and campaigned on a promise of in-depth reforms. The French news agency AFP says Faye on Tuesday spoke of the need to carry out a profound overhaul of Senegal's justice system, citing the recent unrest that has shook the West African country. The meetings are due to run until June 4th in a conference center near the capital, Dakar. Sacked Burundian Prime Minister Alain Guillaume Bunyoni has appeared in court to appeal his conviction on charges including attempting to overthrow the government, a judicial source and witnesses said on Tuesday. Once one of the most powerful regime figures, Bunyoni was prime minister from mid 2020 until September 2022 when he was fired. The move came days after President Evariste Ndayishimiye had warned of an alleged coup against him. That's it for this Wednesday, May 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Every Wednesday and Friday at 9 p.m. UTC time with your pilot, Roger Moon, to listen to the RM Show, where you can respond to our question of the week, get some entertainment news, and enjoy some great music. It's all happening at VOA Africa. God bless. Peace, Africa. Go, 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 go.